It's good to see everybody this morning. It's always good to be back after traveling. I appreciated our deacons last Sunday evening for filling in for me so capably. I actually got back a little bit earlier than I had thought, so I got to get in on all that and really enjoyed our young men's lessons for us that evening. And of course, Brett coming down, it's always nice to have somebody fill in for you that's used to speaking to a couple million people a week. So I know y'all enjoyed that. I hope you didn't get too used to good preaching while I was gone. Really enjoyed being in Crosbyton. And I want to talk to you a little bit about their circumstances there. Crosbyton's about twice the size of Happy, maybe three times the size of Happy in population. And while they have a number of really strong, faithful members there, people who have been in the church for many over half of a century, and strong Christians, their congregation has maybe, if I recall correctly, never had more than two children under the age of 12 while we were there. And they were talking about that while we were there. As we visited with them, they said, just a couple of generations ago, about 40 years ago, I think they were up close to a couple hundred people there in Crosbyton on a regular basis. And of course, the Bible classes were full and the children just everywhere. And just down the road in Rawls, a town about maybe about twice the size of Happy, I had another 125, 150 people with lots of children at the same time. And now they have gotten to the point where in Rawls, I believe they said their average attendance on Sunday morning was 20 and on Sunday evening was 8. And so one of the things that I really thought about as I was doing that gospel meeting for them was how fortunate we are here and how valuable each one of you are. And for those of you who have young families, what you add to the congregation is hard to express adequately without it seeming like we're exaggerating. But our children are the future of this church. And without them, this church will die out eventually. But with them, we will remain strong and we'll continue to grow. And so for those of you who are young parents with young children, we appreciate y'all so much. We appreciate your being here. We appreciate the sacrifice that you make in coming. And we know that the reason you do is because of the sacrifice that was made for each one of us. But I guess what I wanted to say first and foremost is well done. And secondly, to keep the faith and to continue to do that, whether you're just starting out or whether you've been a Christian for over half a century. Keep the faith and continue to be strong, and it will have a great impact. That got me to thinking about a lesson I had done a number of years ago, but something I came across in a, of all things, a financial book. But it was a financial book that was written in a little bit different way than most are. It was entitled A Life Well Spent. And the idea behind the authors writing that book was this. We so often concentrate on the money in our lives. We concentrate on the fact that we need to provide a living for our family. We concentrate on we got to have a roof over their head, clothes on their back, food on the table. And all these things are necessary and important, and God gives us the opportunity to make sure that we can do that. But his main thrust on that was, what are you raising your children for? What are you gathering that money for so that you can raise your children? And if it is not to raise godly children who will have an impact, a favorable impact on society, and if we're not raising them for heaven, then we're missing the point. And it's with that I wanted to share with you an example that he included in his book, and it was a true story. He went out to go to a family reunion. The Montagues were the name of the family. He had been working for a man by the name of Paul Montague for several years. He owned a small manufacturing company, and his son Jim was also working there. I guess Paul was in his early 70s and Jim was in his 40s. And they were pleased with what Mr. Crossan had been doing for them. He was a young financial advisor, and so they invited him out to come and speak at their family reunion. And so he did. Russ Crossan got in an airplane and made it to the airport. When he got to the airport, they picked him up in a little private plane, and they flew him out to their estate where they were having a family reunion. Over 100 people were present that day. And the thing that this financial advisor noticed as he got out and mingled among the people was how different they were from most people who are wealthy. There wasn't a sense of privilege and entitlement among this group. There wasn't that sense of boredom that you see so much and the drinking and all the things that go along with that. Instead, he saw a lot of happy people. He saw interaction between the generations. He saw respect for the young people towards the old people. In short, he saw joy and a decency that he was not used to. And so he asked Paul, the guy who had brought him out there, he said, What's the secret? Why is your family like this? And he said, well, I'll tell you what. He said, we have a very close family. He said, in the last six generations, we have had 15 preachers, another 15 who have worked with the song leading at different congregations, another 7 that were missionaries. He said, we've had 12 Christian college students within this group. He said, there were 17 public school teachers and another 7 professors and then 20 Bible class teachers. And so the financial advisor, Russ Crossan, pressed him a little bit more and he said, well, how did y'all do this? And so the man said, come on inside, I want to show you something. And so he invited him in and he took him to a library that they had in there. And he pulled out this big old book and he said, this is the key. And he turned to some pages and he came across a speech that was made by their patriarch, a guy by the name of Daniel Montague. And the speech was made August the 2nd of 1882. So it had taken place over 100 years earlier at a similar family gathering. And Daniel Montague was 77 years old. That means he was born in 1805. That meant that he lived with people who fought in the American Revolution. It also meant that he lived through the Civil War, that he had family that fought within the Civil War and friends that fought within the Civil War. It meant that he had seen a lot of life. And he was also seeing something in 1882 that's kind of interesting. He was seeing things in society that he thought were kind of a challenge and in many ways a counter to the church. And this is what he said to his to those that were gathered, and they recorded it. He was talking about important principles, and he said, if you wish these principles established and carried out by your descendants, inculcate into the minds and hearts of your children the principles of religious instruction. Everything, almost, that is evil, everything, almost, to subvert the religion of Jesus Christ is at work, and it is absolutely necessary to train the rising generation in the principles of Christ. It is the great work of the country. For Christian institutions, friends, we have this reason this day to thank God. And what I ask of you who are now on the stage of action is that you should be true to the principles of Christ and humanity, to the name and characteristics of the Montagues that have gone before you. Now, that's fascinating to me. You train your children, those of you who are on the stage of action, he said. It was their turn, wasn't it? He said, you train your children with Christian principles. And then they can take care of the things, these principles of Christ and humanity and of the family. And six generations later, over 100 years later, this is what it produced. It produced a family who, in a very large part, was living for God. And the thing that impressed him, this financial advisor, was he was, I guess, in his late 20s at the time, and he was just starting out with his own family. And he said, here I was sent out there to go and advise them on finances because they felt that that was important. And he said, I came back with something far greater, and it was a standard for life. He talked about the fact that the key that he saw from that, from this group of people, to all the friendly interaction, to the love that the family had for one another, was the fact that the succeeding generations from their patriarch had obviously done their part. And they had carried on their part of instilling within their children the principles of Christ. And so that's what I want to encourage you on today. I want to warn you at the outset as we talk about this that there will be some who will instill within their children the principles of Christ, and their children will not remain faithful always to that. And we understand that because some of us did not always remain faithful to our parents' instruction. Don't give up on them. Don't quit praying for them. If you have children raised and they're not doing exactly as you would like, your part was to raise them and train them for Christ. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it. And a lot of people beat themselves to death saying, well, that means I didn't raise them right. I never forget the fact that God was the only parent of Adam and Eve within the garden. And while God obviously did not start out with Adam and Eve as children, they were certainly babes when it came to this world, and he certainly made no mistakes. And the time that he did have with them, I can assure you, is far better spent than our lifetime with our children. And yet Adam and Eve still departed, at least for a while. So what God is not promising is that if you do your part, that there will never be hell for any succeeding generation. What he's saying, I believe, is this. If you raise them in this standard and they stay in this standard, then they won't depart. And the teachings will not depart. They'll always remember it, even if they go off. They'll know that what they're doing is not right. I think we far too often get concerned with God's part, and we forget that if we'll just do our part, he'll keep his end of the bargain. Train up a child in the way he should go is our charge. Psalms 127. This is Solomon. Solomon, who made a lot of mistakes. Made a lot of mistakes with his kids, as a matter of fact. He said this, the 127th Psalm, verse 1. Unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain. Our children are God's children. The houses that we are building for them better be built spiritually by God. We better be using his blueprints. And as we watch over them, we need to be watching over them from a godly perspective. We are Christians, or we're nothing. If we ever forget that, one day we'll be reminded on the day of judgment. Raise your child in the way he should go. But he talks to people who forget that and who get to thinking that the physical things are what's important. In verse 2, in vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. Sons are a heritage from the Lord, children a reward for him. As we raise our children, remember, as important as the physical things are, and as great as your duty is to make sure that they are taken care of physically, your primary duty is that of a spiritual nature. How are you helping them to build the spiritual house that they will have someday as when they leave you? Psalms 49. This is from the sons of Korah. It says this, starting in verse 10, for all can see that wise men die. The foolish and the senseless alike perish and leave their wealth to others. Their tombs will remain their houses forever, their dwellings for endless generations, though they had named lands after themselves. You ever get jealous over somebody who's got a lot of money? They're prominent. Everybody knows their name. Lands may have even been named after them. And what God is saying through inspiring the sons of Korah is this. If they didn't live for him, they wasted their life. He goes on to say in verse 13, this is the fate of those who trust in themselves and of their followers who approve of their sayings. Like sheep, they are destined for the grave, and death will feed on them. The upright will rule over them in the morning. Their forms will decay in the grave. far from their princely mansions. This life's going to be over someday. And your physical body is going to decay. But you got a spirit. You have soul within you. And he talks about that in verse 15. Whichever one of the sons of Korah that this is that's writing this says this, "But God will redeem my life from the grave. He will surely take me to himself." That's the promise we have. And that's the promise we have for our children if we will allow God to build the spiritual house that we dwell in. Verse 16, "Do not be overawed when a man grows rich, when the splendor of his house increases, for he'll take nothing with him. When he dies, his splendor will not descend with him. Though he lived, he counted himself blessed, and men praised him, and men praise you when you prosper. He will join the generation of his fathers who will never see the light of life." And then he says this, "A man who has riches without understanding is like the beasts that perish." I was listening to Dave Ramsey the other day, and a woman had called in, and she is talking about the fact that they were trying to put within in their financial lives the principles that Dave Ramsey had so they could get out of debt. And she said, "Now I'm expecting." And she said, "My husband is upset or frustrated," not that she was expecting, but because they were trying to get their debt paid down, and now they were going to have to put that debt on hold. And Dave Ramsey said, "Wait just a second." He said, "When we talk about these financial principles, what we're trying to do is change your family tree." He said, "In order to change your family tree, you have to have a family tree in the first place." He said, "Do not forget why you're doing these things that are financial. You're doing them for your children, for those who will follow after you." And if you and I get so caught up with our bills and with the things that we want to do physically, so much so that our kids are getting in the way of our financial plans, we're missing the point. We're doing these things for our posterity, for our children and our grandchildren, and for those who will follow along after us. Think about this. What is the family reunion that your family may have, if they're fortunate enough to do so, going to look like in 100 years? Is it going to be filled with joy, a closeness, a respect for one another, because they have a love for Christ and a love for God? Will the principles that you are instilling in your children now be the type of principles that are needed that they will instill in their children and on down through the generations to where your family can be a benefit for Christ and a benefit for society? Or are you just making physical things? Because if you're just doing things for physical purposes, if your life is encompassed with how much money you're going to make, someday you're going to reach the end and you're going to look back and you're going to realize you wasted your life. But if your focus is upon on things spiritual and on the spiritual lives of your family, you'll be able to look back, and even if you don't have a dime in your pocket, you'll be able to look back over a life well lived. I want to say again that sometimes our children will let us down. Sometimes they will not take up their part of the responsibility. But that's not what we want to focus on. We want to focus upon our lives and what we need to do for them. A couple more passages and we'll close. The first is found in 2 Peter chapter 3. It's talking about the end time. Remember a few weeks ago we gave that example of the big rocks, where a guy put a bunch of big rocks in a big old pickle jar, and then he poured some gravel and sand and water in it, and he asked them what the point of it was, and they said, "Well, the point is you can always fit more into your life no matter what you have." And he said, "No, the point is if you're going to put big rocks in, you have to put big rocks in first. Everything else is just sand and gravel. The day of the Lord will come like a thief," Peter writes in 2 Peter 3. In verse 10, "The day of the Lord will come like a thief. The heavens will disappear with a roar. The elements will be destroyed by fire, and the earth and everything in it will be laid bare. Since everything will be destroyed in this way, what kind of people ought you to be? You ought to live holy and godly lives as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming. That day will bring about the destruction of the heavens by fire, and the elements will melt in the heat. Think about that for a moment. When that day comes, everything that you have worked for, that burns, it's just the gravel and the sand and the water alive. But everything that you have that does not burn, everything that you have that meets this next part, in keeping with this promise, we are looking forward to a new heaven and a new earth, the home of righteousness. These are the things we need to be focused on primarily. And if we can do that, then someday we will enjoy that home by the grace of God. But we've got to do things His way. We've got to put the principles of Christ into our life. Psalms 25, "Who then is the man who fears the Lord? He will instruct him in the way chosen for him. He will spend his days in prosperity, and his descendants will inherit the land." If you want real prosperity, then you do something for your family and for God that will have eternal ramifications. There's a great day coming. God wants us to be with Him in heaven forever. But the only way that we're ever going to do that is if we can apply His principles to our life and live for Him and His Son. Are you a Christian? Have you confessed your belief that Jesus is Lord? Have you repented of your sins? Have you had those sins washed away in the holy waters of baptism? If not, and you're ready to do that, we'd encourage you to do that today. If you need the prayers of the congregation, or if we can help in any way, won't you come while we stand and sing?